course, we have to be broad-minded. We have to sympathize too with the bosses, because they were also having a hard time to make ends meet, as well as the workers. It affected everybody, the business and all, you know. And we were not out to hurt industry or anything like that, but it's, when you got your back to the wall, you try to survive, don't you? You do your best. That's all. And the workers didn't have any money, or they were ground down, you know, and they couldn't save any money. So they had to do something. So organization was the only answer. So that was that. But the unemployed movement, I would say definitely it was a good thing for all the unemployed, no matter if it was Burnaby or any part of the country. There were some cases where leaders were not good people, you could say, for the movement. Some of them made a lot of mistakes and inexperienced. You see, at that time, the workers were inexperienced on a lot of things, on organization and how to conduct themselves and what to do and what not to do and all this sort of thing. But they got more experience as time went on, and we had quite an orderly organization eventually. We had a lot of petty things come up. They sent me out all over, you know, in the Communist Party even, to quiet certain, iron out the difficulties in certain cells, they call them cells. We just call them block committees or groups, you know, but the bosses call them communist cells. Well, there'd be a little friction take place, and they sent me out to make peace and things of that nature, you know, because the workers were not ideologically advanced in the communist philosophy or the working class philosophy. They were part of capitalism. Dog eat dog and the devil take the hindermost. That was the only thing they knew. And so it was difficult because to get really advanced intellectuals, it was difficult. You know, people who really had a good foundation in working class philosophy, socialist philosophy, and were able to give proper leadership and guidance to the people. That was the difficulty. And they developed it all right. We developed that, but it was over a period of time, and it didn't happen overnight, you understand.
Did you have education programs for the workers, for the unemployed?
Well, education was not even mentioned. It was a matter of understanding. You see, a person can be very illiterate and be a clever person and have good common sense and be able to figure things out. To quote you an example of that, during the Russian Revolution, one of the Kerensky officers came up and tried to confuse one of the officers in the Red Army, the Bolsheviks, they called them. And he started using all kinds of flowery language and all this, and why he was making a big mistake, this fellow, and all this. He says, "I don't know. I don't know anything about what you're talking about. All I know is that I'm a member of the working class, I'm the peasantry, I'm impoverished by the Tsar and his group, and he says, the people are starving and I'm fighting for them. That's all I know." That's as simple as that. So you don't have to have a high education, although it helps.
I didn't mean that kind of education, I meant consciousness.
That's right, no, that's it. There was a lack of that, definitely. There was a lack of proper understanding amongst the local leaders, and not only local leaders, but district leaders, provincial leaders. And so we had stool pigeons get in, glib-tongued orators and all this sort of thing, and we had to weed them out. We soon found them, but...
How do you find them?
Well, you just the same as a policeman finds a suspect, I guess. You just keep your eyes open, and everyone is watching. Everybody is watching one another. You don't trust anybody anymore. You get into a situation like that, you can't trust anybody. You work along with them and all this, but actually write down in your own heart, you don't exactly leave yourself wide open. You are always covering up your tracks, as it were, because you never know get into that movement and disrupt it and use and leave the workers open to attack by the club swingers from the other side, the establishment. And the establishment were paying these fellows, and a few dollars is a lot of money. They'd pay them a few bucks to get in there, do the work. And they would get in there and get into the con men, spies, same as the international spies, not today, same idea. And they had, we had them right in our own movement. So there was that difficulty. And we had to develop good leadership towards the end there. And then, of course, it brought on a long war to keep to get the people slaughtered off again, and so on. And that was the war number, Second World War, and things started to, from there on flourish, you know, more or less. And the unemployed became unemployed, so there was no more need for the unemployed organization. And from the Workers' Unity League, the lumber workers took over. That was under the wing of the CCF, the IWW,
And the IWW took over from the Workers' Unity League.
Well, they took the membership away, right, as it were, yeah, because they agitated and so on, and said, "Then here we got a better organization, better basis, and a broader appeal, and so on, and come in with us." And that was the beginning of the lumber workers. And so the Workers' Unity League, as an organization, more or less fell by the wayside as a result of it, because the people were not ready for revolution, and they were not ready for socialism, but they were ready for somebody to organize to protect themselves momentarily. That was really the issue. And a lot of these people were anti-socialists, who were in the movement too, in the unemployed movement, they were anti-socialists. They were liberal conservatives and what have you. But they were not sufficiently developed ideologically to be able to understand the movement and that is political significance of the movement. So therefore they went into the pale pinkers, and the moderates, as it were, and still are there. And as far as we are concerned, in the revolutionary movement, we are not in favor of the NDP. Yet we support it in election time and so on, a lot of us, because it's helping the people momentarily, and it is solving a certain amount of hardship, and bringing pressure to bear on the establishment, and all of that we figure is good. But on the other hand, it has done harm to the communist movement, definitely, because they have split the workers up, you see, into the two camps. They've been divided into two camps, whereas if they had the one central body representing them, and in that case, the communists could have been well advanced by now here. They will be again. But even in the NDP movement, there are lots of our boys in there, lots of them, and they're doing good work. They're doing their best, and they're boring from within, as it were, trying to pressurize them to come further left, you see. And that struggle is going on, and that struggle goes on not only in the NDP. It goes on in the Conservative Party, it goes on in the Liberal Party and the Social Credit Party. There is the right wing and the left wing. And that struggle is always taking place. And sometimes they go a little bit to the left and then they go back to the right, and they're oscillating between the right and the left. And that happens in the Communist Party too, same thing. But we say that we must have a correct party line, not too far to the left, not too far to the right, but a line that will suit the biggest majority of the Canadian people, that will be in the best interests of the movement as a whole. That's the correct party line. And there's the right-wing deviationists and the left-wing deviationists and so on. And it is difficult either sometimes to know what is the correct line in any party.